Hello, and welcome back to Cavancast. I was listening back to an old episode, or a few old episodes actually, because someone sent me a message saying, oh, it's crazy how far you've come since 2021, which is ridiculous, really, when I think about it, that it's nearly been 3 years. But I realize I never really go back and listen to anything that I've done, really. I'm really bad for doing stuff, for not doing stuff like that. So people will comment on Instagram and stuff, referencing or quoting something from an episode from years gone by. And I have to be like, yeah? Oh, yeah. I remember saying that. Now, most of the time I do, it'll click in my head. My recall is really bad, but if someone says something that, like, twigs a memory, then it's normally fine. It's normally okay. But I also, I don't know if you feel this. I don't know if I do either, but I feel like I may have been getting a bit less relaxed in the podcasts, in the episodes recently, and, you know, I always say it's a relaxing podcast, and then I feel relaxed. I feel very good, but maybe it just gets a little bit too hyped. So maybe we chill out a little bit for this one and just bring it back down a little bit and just see how we go. I'm actually, I'm on my bed for this episode. Just trying out different things every now and then just to, see what happens. You gotta switch it up every now and then. You gotta go with the flow. And you can hear. So now it's not making a noise. It's been making a noise all evening. And now you can kind of hear it, I guess. Don't ever get a metal bed frame if you don't want to be woken up to in the middle of the night. Anyway, where are we? We're chilling out. We're relaxing. All cool, shooting some people outside of the school. Spring is here. Spring has sprung. The hour has gone forward. We have daylight. Hell yeah, bitches. We got daylight. I'm gonna get that sweet, sweet vitamin D? Vitamin D? Yeah, vitamin D. In my body. That's what I want. I am ready. I ran 18 miles last Sunday and I'm healing quicker, feeling good. It was only 24 hours I couldn't walk for this time rather than 48, which was good. Moving forward, people, we're moving forward. So I hit 18 miles in 3 hours, which I know isn't that fast compared to a lot of people, but I am not in the habit of comparing myself to other people anymore. The craziest thing is I can see now how mental that thought is. Can you imagine running 18 miles further than you have ever run in your life? Your legs are tired, they're tingling all over, they're heavy. You're sweating, you've just done something amazing that you have never done before. And the first thought in your head is, man, that was so slow compared to some people. What? Are you serious? Can you imagine a friend of yours saying that? You would be on them so quickly for the absurdity of putting themselves down after accomplishing something amazing. There is just no way you would let them believe that. Welcome to my entire life. Well, most of it anyway. But not this time. No, no, no. I hit those 18 miles in 3 hours, and do you know where that path spat me out at the end? Muck fucking Donald's. The sweet, sweet irony was fantastic. but it was nowhere near the level of sweetness that I got from the large Fanta that I ordered with extra ice. That was some of the sweetest nectar I have ever ingested in my days. It felt like the best reward. Although when I walked in, I did ask them if their ice machine was working first. I think I would have cried if I'd run all that way, seen McDonald's over the horizon, getting ever closer, my mouth salivating at the thought of an ice-cold, fantastic beverage hitting my taste buds. See what I did there? Got there, and there was no frozen, swirling blocks of refreshments maximizing my hydration experience. Frozen swirling blocks. But luckily it was working. It was good. I got my ice. I got my Fanta. I got my commercial worthy moment. There's a few times in my life that I get that effect from a drink now. The drink that's like the level of a commercial or an advert. You know, slow motion, sun glistening off the condensation of it on the side. Pure happiness and elation. You know the vibe, you know what I'm talking about. Most often that comes when you wake up at 3 a.m. in the morning. 3 a.m. in the morning. 3 in the morning. You wake up at 3 in the morning, parched off of your titties. And you remember the full glass of water that you left on your windowsill that has very considerately absorbed the cold from outside through the window. So that shit is mind-blowing when you drink it. There's not too many other times, other than times like that, that it's happened, but this was really up there with the best of them. Unfortunately, then I had an hour and a half of walk home. No, I didn't. It wasn't an hour and a half. Stop exaggerating. This story doesn't need embellishment. I just ran for 3 hours. I don't need to be like, yeah, and then I walked there an hour and a half home. Through the snow, uphill, both ways. It was half an hour. It was fine. It was a bit cold. Well, I didn't really walk. I limped. But it was all worth it. It was all fine. And you know what? I actively tried to tell my body how proud I was of it, told it well done, how much I loved it, and how grateful I was for it carrying me through all those miles. You know, trying to build up my own reputation with myself and support myself. Because I think I've come to the conclusion that off the back of the actions speak louder than words theory. If you do good actions for self-esteem, but then you talk yourself down and out of it, you're screwed. If you say good things and supportive things, but that doesn't lead to doing things, the words might help a bit, but they'll eventually fall flat because they're not reinforced by actions. If you do the good things, no matter how small they are, you don't have to run 18 miles. That is the point. If you do something good, productive, loving, compassionate, difficult, challenging, hard, anything like that, and then you actually give yourself credit while you're doing it, and then after you've done it, and then again at the end of that day when you're in bed going over the day and everything that's happened, that's the sweet spot, man. That's the powerhouse. That's the hamster and the wheel you need to get going. Hamster and wheel. It's an interesting one. But yeah, that's the good stuff. And perspective doesn't matter either to what's challenging or hard. It's all subjective. Whether it's brushing your teeth or running a marathon, give yourself the credit. And don't stop doing it when you start feeling good either. When you've built up some momentum, don't just be like, oh, I already feel happy. I don't need to actively support myself anymore. No. That is when you need to do it the most. Because you feel good about yourself and you feel good about your words, so you believe them more because they hold more weight, because you feel so positively about them. That's when it gets really juicy. Juicy. It gets really juicy. So that's been me. That's been my realizations of recent. That, and I am quite good at putting furniture together. No real story there. I was just taking down some old furniture and putting it back up again somewhere else. And I did it well. And I just wanted to flex that. So, if you haven't listened to Cavancast before, here's how it works. I use a random word generator to generate 5 random words, and then I talk about them with whatever comes to mind. Specific, vague, tale-based, like with the Fanta. I told you the story, but I could have told you about the history of Fanta, maybe. Or I could have told you about the time I dyed my hair blonde and thought it looked okay until someone held a can of Fanta up to my hair and it was exactly the same color and I didn't realize. They called me Failey Williams for like a year. They didn't. I literally made that up just now. But they should have done. That would have been very clever. Because I had a massive crush on Hayley Williams at the time. At the time, let's be honest, never went away. It's never gonna. Don't think it ever will. You know, if I end up ever getting married, when whoever it is, the marrier person, who marries you? Not your significant other, the person that does they marry you two together. Whatever, them. Whenever they say, does anyone know of any reason why these two should not be wed in holy matrimony or whatever they say? Let them speak now or forever hold their peace. Me, I will. I'll just burst out with, I object! In a Scottish accent as well, because that shouting that always reminds me of Shrek when he bursts through the door. And that's in my head now. I'll shout, I object. And then I'll have to say, sorry, babe. My heart belongs to Hayley. And then Misery Business starts playing from seemingly out of nowhere. I don't know, the church or wherever we are probably has a good sound system. And then Hayley bursts through the door and starts singing to my former betrothed. And then we ride off into the sunset. And then I wake up, probably. I hope that's my dream tonight. Hayley Williams is the singer of Paramore, by the way, a pop punk band that had been around for a while. And she has bright orange hair. So that was the joke. If you don't know who Hayley Williams is, that whole thing would not have made sense. And I apologize. No, I don't. Why do I keep apologizing for this? It's your fault for not knowing who Hayley Williams is. If you didn't, you should. You've got no reason not to. She's a goddess. Anyway, I hope you're doing well. I hope you're comfortable and relaxed doing whatever you're doing. And if you're not, I hope you are by the end of this. Well, I hope you are in 5 minutes, really, but there's no rush. You do you. You go at your pace. It's okay. I'm going to crack on with the first word of the day. And that first word is swanky. Mm-mm-mm. Swanky. Swanky, 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 swanky. Honestly, I'd just be happy saying the word over and over again for 5 to 10 minutes. But actually, I remember doing that once before, and I can't remember which word I did it with, but I remember it losing all meaning, and I kind of hated myself by the end of it. But we're not in the business of we're not in the business of self-hatred anymore. No, we are in a place of compassion. Swanky compassion. Swanky, swanky, swanky. I do actually use that word quite a lot. Anytime anything is swanky, a place or a person or whatever, I will comment on it. I think actually just to use the word, does that make it one of my favorite words? Who knows? But it's definitely up there. And I always say it in the same way as well. Of realizing this, it's always the same little sentence with the same inflection. Oh, this is swanky. Oh, you look swanky. Oh, it's more that noise, I think. Oh, it's all part of the same package. It's the deluxe deal of compliments. The meal deal of praise. I was in a swanky place the other night, actually. Well, is swanky the right word for it? Well, okay, what is the actual definition of swanky? We do things right here. Sometimes. Occasionally. When we feel like it. Stylish, luxurious. Stylish, luxurious, and expensive. Yeah, okay, I would say the place I was in was like half of this. Two-thirds. It was stylish and luxurious. I don't know about expensive. No, do you know what? We'll give it the benefit of the doubt. It was swanky. It was all the way swanky. Do you know what else it was? Cozy. And wouldn't you know it, it was called the Cozy Club. And I'd never actually been into one before. But by Jove? It was Jove, wasn't it? See, I told you, I can't remember anything I've said. Jove. Yeah, it is. It's by Jove. Yeah. By Jove, it did what it said on the tin. It was very cozy. And do you know what else, actually? I found out about the origin of that phrase a while ago. Does what it says on the tin. It came from... Shit. Paint? Was it paint? Varnish. Ronseal varnish. It was their slogan. I should have known that. My van is covered in it. I inadvertently got sickeningly high in that van more times than I should have. The first time, not even drugs. The first time was when I was using a load of adhesive to, okay, context, I converted a van into a camper van, so it had to sort out like insulation and wood and all this kind of stuff. The first time I was using loads of, not even spray adhesive, like just a massive tub of industrial strength adhesive with a paintbrush. So I stick loads of this stuff up, this like reflective insulation stuff. And then I went out for the night and I had a mattress in the van. Came back, went to sleep in it, not thinking at all. Then I woke up a few hours later, not dead, thankfully, but out of my fucking nut from inhaling all that glue in an unventilated space. So that was the first time. If I hadn't learned my lesson enough then, a month later, I did the same thing with the Ronseal varnish that I used to stain and seal all the wood paneling and cladding in the van. And there was a lot of it. Thankfully, this time I didn't fall asleep, but it was still a very fluffy time. Fluffy is the word that came to my head there, and I'm not sure I've ever used the word fluffy to describe being high. I felt a lot of fluffy things whilst high, but not specifically felt fluffy in myself, as far as I know. But this time, you know what, it felt right. That felt like the right word. So there we go. That's what you're getting. I hope that's okay. Anyway, Ronseal is a very, very well-known wood varnish, and their original slogan way back in the day was it does what it says on the tin. Although it didn't say anything on the tin except Ronseal, so I guess yeah, it sealed the wood, but I don't know who Ron is. Who's Ron? Ron's just the guy, man. Yeah, but what guy? He's just the guy. The guy. What, did he like invent it? No, he's just the guy. Okay. All right then, he's just the guy. He's just the guy. But yeah, Cozy Club did exactly what it said on the tin. It was a club and it was cozy. It was great. Many a cushion, many a dim light, many a velvety sofa, and many a velvety lampshade. Also antler lampshades. I don't know if they were real or not, but they were definitely a vibe. I actually have an antler lamp myself. Next to me. I got very lampy when I moved into this place, realizing how bad big lights are. I've got this little antler light, but I don't think this one's real. I think this one's made of plastic. Yeah, I think so. I was about to ask it. Are you made of plastic or are you the real thing? Do you do what you say on the tin? This is what happens when I'm recording here instead of a booth. There's stimulus around. Okay, there's plants. There's, well, no, that's about it. There's not actually that much in my room. I'm minimalist, you know. I'm so minimalist. There's massage oil. You can see that. There's one contact lens. Because who needs two? Who needs two contact lenses? Anyway. Where was I? Antlers. Antler lampshades. Yeah. The whole place felt very cozy and swanky. Do you know what? It felt very cavern. It was very cavern in there. If you ever want a good location to listen to Caverncast, and you're near a cozy club, Caverncast in a cozy club would be a very quality time. I know quality is spelt with a Q, but it sounds the same. And that's what we're dealing with here. Sounds. Phonetics. And stuff like that. Speaking of, actually, when we are dealing with sounds, but also, you know, this is a podcast whose foundation is generating random words. So, you know, it's both. But swanky is a very good sounding word. Swanky. Like, it's good. It's very tactile. It's very good. But I've realized that, as far as I know, no other words exist like swanky. Like swanky, but just with the other vowels. There is no swinky, swanky, swanky, or swanky. Swanky doesn't really count. The Y. We'll forget the Y. Swanky, 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 swanky. They all sound full of potential, but I don't think they exist. I could be wrong. Like I said, we do things right here. Sometimes, occasionally, possibly, when we feel like it. I think that's what I said. Is that what I said? Who knows? Could be wrong. I'm so inconsistent as a person. Okay. Okay, so Google, help me out. So, swanky, not a word, but is the name of a brand of folding knife. Swanky, also not a word, but is a brand of makeup. Swanky. I really hope swanky is a word. Okay, not a word, but is in Urban Dictionary as basically wonky, but with a bit more pizzazz. And like, you're usually just a bit pissed and drunk. Yeah, for anyone listening who is not from the UK, pissed means drunk. Not like pissed as in pissed off. Pissed off is angry. Pissed is I'm pissed. Are we missing one? Swanky. What's swanky? Also not a word. It's very surprising because swanky is just as weird, I think. But that one gets a definition. Oh, he's got a lot of swank. That doesn't sound right. Damn, boy, you got some swank. I'm sorry, that was probably very uncomfortable to listen to. It was fun to say, though. I'm gonna say it again. Damn, boy, you got some swank. Oh, Jesus. I might just start interchanging them and just see if anyone says anything. Damn, this place is swanky, man. What did you say? Swanky. This place is swanky. I'll just gaslight him instead. That's more fun. That's what all the cool kids are doing these days, isn't it? Gaslighting. Someone told me recently that they got gaslit into thinking that it was gas lamping for a long time. I might start using that just to continue the cycle. So if you ever hear it, stay on your toes. Also, gullible is written on your ceiling. Did you know that? Shall we move? Let's move. Let's move on to the next one. Let's swank our way over to the next word. Maybe? Yeah? That's a slow burner. That could work though. I'll leave it with you. I'll leave you to see what you think. Moving on, we have horn. Horn. There's no Y on the end. Get your minds out of the gutter. Might have just been me. It probably was just me. But that's okay. I'm horny, horny, horny. So horny, I'm horny, horny, horny. What an absolute banger of a tune. I don't know if any of you watch Skins. If you did, sorry. Sorry for the person you probably are now. But I remember being really annoyed at the censorship of one of the episodes where Tony, one of the characters in the first couple of seasons, he starts singing, I'm horny, I'm horny, horny, horny. And then I watched the episode on TV a while later, and they changed it to, I'm Tony, Tony, Tony. Mate, absolutely swunkled by that, I was. Yeah, I reckon that one can work in there. Yeah, sure. Say it with confidence, Kevin. That's all you need. I was absolutely swunkled by that. Damn weird censorship. Damn weird censorship. So as it as so as happen so as happens as happens as it happens so as it tends to happen as it tends to happen on this podcast with some words, we end up with words that have a different meaning to themselves. I refer back to camp. You can either be camp or you can go camping. Two different things. With horn, we have horns on things. Well, we don't. Animals do. That'd be weird if we did, wouldn't it? Suddenly one day. The royal we is what I meant. We're all one, really, aren't we? We're all connected in the great circle of life. Simba, everything the light touches is your kingdom. Simba, Simba, Simba. Brain's going off on a Lion King tangent now. What animals have horns? Unicorns, unicorns, rhinos, narwhals. Why did I go for two fictional animals? Oh, no, they're real, aren't they? I forgot rhinos existed. Gotcha. It's narwhals. Narwhals exist. Didn't find that out till relatively recently. What else has horns? What more regular animal has horns? And why is this where my brain just stops? Why doesn't someone ask me to name 10 films as well right now, just to rub it in? Why not? Normal animals with horns. That wasn't me Googling. That was. Well, it kind of was, except Google is my head this time. Except the way my brain works is just like I ask my brain normal animals with horns, and it just. Then I just clicked, I'm feeling lucky. So my brain would just serve me up a picture of like a bull with a massive air horn on its head. Oh, there we go, bull. Bulls have horns. There we go. It works. Slightly unorthodox, but it works. Yeah, that's a good segue to the other type of a horn.
Huh?
That one. How would you spell that? So H A A, H E H H H, Sure, why not? Because these are the things that matter. So I'm wondering where the difference came from, and I reckon it's going to be that originally animal horns were used to make the, you know, the. Oh, how am I going to do this on a relaxing podcast? Like a. Like that one. Like a depressed husky, that was. Normally they sound like calls to war or battle or like. The enemy is coming. That just sounds like where, doesn't it? The enemy is coming. Where? Over there. That was a silly joke, wasn't it? Anyway, yeah, they had this like horn that was like, wah. And then one guy was like, oh, that's sick, man. That sounds dope. You should be in my orchestra with the trumpets and that. And they just put it in an orchestra. The guy was French as well, just so happened to be French. And thus the French horn was born. That's what I reckon it was. I'm pretty sure that's what it was actually. But let me fact check just in case. Because you never totally know.
The original horn was simply an animal horn. The word for horn in German is horn, in French, cor. And in Italian, corno. The terms for cor and corno originally meant an animal's horn, directly expressing the animal origins of the horn. It is most likely that people from ancient times turned the horns of their prey into musical instruments. I knew it. This description both explains the origin of the horn and the etymology of the word horn. There are many other musical instruments that bear the name horn, but today the instrument known as the horn is commonly called the French horn. Until the middle of the 16th century, the horn was used by hunters as a means of communication during the hunt. Ah, I didn't get that one. And thus, the body of the horn was wound in large coils so that it could be carried on the shoulder and sounded while riding a horse. The bell faced to the rear to keep it from getting in the rider's way. The horn is very similar to the trumpet in that sound is produced through the vibration of the lips. Maybe that is why the horn has a history of development almost identical to that of the trumpet. 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 Horns made up to the middle of the 19th century are called natural horns. Yeah, my horns are totally natural. I've had no work done. They're just 100% natural. I know, feel them. They're great. They're called natural horns because of their simplistic structure, which consists of a large bell, a single coiled tube, and a mouthpiece. The pitch of this type of instrument can only be changed by changing the vibration of the lips, and even then it is only possible to produce a tone referred to as a natural harmonic. This means that it cannot play musical scales. So not like Maisie Boy in Shrek, who was really feeling himself at the fanfare and started absolutely serving with his... You know when he gets hit? I was looking for a way to shoehorn that into this word. Because that whenever I hear horn or trumpet, like that's what comes into my head straight away. It's always Shrek. This state of affairs drove the players of the horn to think of sticking a hand in the bell to produce a tone other than this natural harmonic. This way of playing, this way of playing the horn, called the hand-stopping technique, that's what I was thinking of, developed among horn players in the 18th century. There's a lot of jazz that happens with, isn't it? Oh. Despite the new hand-stopping technique, the range of tones possible with the horn was still very limited. The tones and pitches were unstable, and the timbre, oh, what a word, timbre, had a muffled quality. The resolution of this problem came in the mid-19th century with the development of what was known then as, the valve horn, a horn whose effective length could be altered instantly by opening one or more valves like those on today's modern instruments. With the arrival of the valve horn, horn players could now easily play a stable chromatic scale. There you go. And a chromatic scale, for anyone who is not aware, is a scale that goes up and it just involves every note on the way up. So instead of like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, it'll be A sharp, B, C, C sharp. So it has all the sharps and flats in there. So instead of, you get, which is the same, and it's not the same. It's still descending, but it just does it in shorter steps, and it hits every step on the way down. Semitones instead of whole tones. So if you think about a piano, it hits every white and black note on the way down instead of just certain ones. There you go. There's your music theory lesson of the day. Let's move on. Well, speaking of music, we're going to move on, and we're going to move on to Ali. And the only thing that Ali brings up in my head is Tin Pan Alley, one of my favorite places in the world. Tin Pan Alley. There's actually two. There's the Tin Pan Alley I know and love, which is Denmark Street in London. So in central London, right near Tottenham Court Road, and it is a street just chock full of music shops of all different kinds. It was like my mecca when I was growing up. I've bought many musical instruments there, many guitar strings, many accessories. I used to hang around there when I was in bands growing up, played a couple of gigs around there. It's had a wonderful energy that came from everyone loving the same thing. There was just that collective buzz, and it was really nice. But the London Tin Pan Alley got its name from the original Tin Pan Alley in New York. In New York, New York. It's not often you Americans do stuff before us, but this is one of them. This is one of them. So a little bit of history for you. Tin Pan Alley was a collection of music publishers and songwriters in New York City that absolutely dominated the popular music of the United States in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Originally, it was a specific location on West 28th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues in the Flower District of Manhattan, as commemorated by a plaque on 28th Street between Broadway and 6th. Several buildings on Tin Pan Alley are protected as New York City designated landmarks, and the section of 28th Street from 5th to 6th Avenue is also officially co-named Tin Pan Alley. The start of Tin Pan Alley is usually dated to about 1885, when a number of music publishers set up shop in the same district of Manhattan. The end of Tin Pan Alley is less clear-cut. Some date it to the start of the Great Depression in the 1930s, when the phonograph, radio, and motion pictures supplanted sheet music as the driving force of American popular music. Yeah, see, everybody knew theory back then. Everybody knew how to like write music and this, that, and the other. Very different to today. But others considered Tin Pan Alley to have continued into the 50s, when earlier styles of music were being upstaged by the rise of rock and or roll, which was centered on the Brill Building. The Brill Building. Which I think was slap bang in the middle of Tin Pan Alley. There are conflicting explanations regarding the origins of the term Tin Pan Alley. The most popular account holds that it was originally a derogatory reference made by Monroe H. Rosenfeld in the New York Herald to the collective sound made by many cheap upright pianos, all playing different tunes, being reminiscent of the banging of tin pans in an alleyway. And they're just like, you know what, we'll have that. The Grove Dictionary of American Music also cites Rosenfeld as the originator of the term, dating its first use to 1903. However, whilst an article on Tin Pan Alley can be found in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch from May of that year, this is unattributed, and no piece by Rosenfeld that employs the phrase has been discovered. So it's all rumors and stories. That's cool, though. I love it when a hater just starts calling you a name, and then you're just like, no, actually, that sounds quite cool. We'll have that. And the guy's like, well, no. No, you can't. I didn't mean it like that. Yeah, but we're having it like that anyway. That's really cool. Thanks, man. Thank you for bestowing that upon us. God, well, now I'm going to call it Smelly Person Alley. No, we like Tin Pan Alley. We're going to take that one. Sorry, Rosenfeld. And my thoughts on this are that it doesn't really matter too much where a name originated, only that it carries the reputation and the history and the stories of the past of that place into the present day. You know, like the heritage of Tin Pan Alley or the Grand Ole Opry venue, a very prestigious venue in Nashville, or even the opposite, you know, places where great tragedies have happened. If a place has had a great impact on the world as we know it today, it should be remembered. And, you know, when many people call Tin Pan Alley the birthplace of American popular music, I'd say it falls into that category quite nicely. Also, don't hang about in dark alleys. It's weird. Moving on. The next word is amazing, right? And I'll tell you for why. The word is nebulous. And it was gonna be cloud. And I really wanted it to be cloud, because I had a wonderfully cute story about to do with cloud. And then as I was thinking about it, I thought, And I know I've just been talking about the fact that my brain is terrible at recall, but not in this moment, because I thought, this sounds familiar.
So I went a-searching, and what I found was, yes, indeed, cloud is already a word that has come up and I have spoken about before. In 2022, 2 whole years ago. So if you want to hear more about clouds, jump back to that one. But for now, I really want to tell this story. So the word is nebulous, and I know this is going to sound like bullshit, but the reason it's amazing is because literally the next batch of words I generated had nebulous in there. I swear. So I just took that as a sign that this story needs to be told. It's not even that amazing of a story. Well, it is. I think it is. It's just not that detailed. So nebulous means in the form of a cloud or haze. Clever, clever little loophole there. Or it means vague or ill-defined. Of a, like a concept, like a vague concept. The example it gives is nebulous concepts like quality of life. And life is pretty nebulous, isn't it? The nebulosity of life is rather apparent in many a field. Much like this podcast. I might start saying that at the beginning. To try and make myself sound smarter when I'm explaining the podcast. Instead of how I normally do it, I'll just say, so I use a random word generator to generate 5 random words, and then I talk about them. Could be nebulous, could be unambiguous, while you tranquilize at your own pace. Oh, that's the one. That's the pitch. Give me a boardroom and one of those flippy chart things and a presentation thing. I'll smash this out of the park. Anyway, nebulous. Nebulous are a brand of clouds, aren't they?
Are they? Nebulous clouds? Or am I just thinking of nebulas?
Hang on. Oh no, nimbus clouds are what I'm thinking of. Uh-huh. And I used to think nimbus clouds only existed in the Dragon Ball Z universe, as the cloud that Goku rides on and uses to get around. Well, really, that's Dragon Ball. It doesn't really do it much in Dragon Ball Z. But no, they are an actual cloud. They're basically the big, dark, ominous rain clouds that you can see on the horizon looming over. And that would make sense because nimbus is derived from nimbo, which means rain. Haha. So anyway, back to nebulous and this story I'm supposedly about to tell. Last week I was hanging out with my friends and their daughter, who is my goddaughter, whom I love very much. Her imagination is wicked, and she's incredibly observant. Now, I haven't spent that much time around kids, so this might just be a normal kid thing, but I think she's better than every other kid her age, so I'm going to say she's special. So we all took a little trip into town the other day. And her mum and dad were in the front seats, and her and I were the troublemakers in the back seats. And she has no trouble speaking her mind, which I respect massively. Her thing at the moment is Frozen 2, so naturally we had to put on Into the Unknown in the car, the main song from Frozen 2. And she's pretty good on the lyrics for being two. So she was singing along as best she could. And I started to
sing along as well. Well, I tried to join. I got about 5 seconds in before I got a straight up
no
from her. But I wasn't about to listen to one no snot nose kid told me to do. So I doubled down, and not only did I begin singing again, but I began doing music video worthy actions as well. Oh yeah, oh yeah. And oh, what a surprise. She loved that. Of course she did. I'm a professional. But then the novelty of watching me look like a bit of a bell end wore off, as it naturally does, and she took to looking out of the car window. And almost immediately, she went, "There's a dog." And I went, "Where?" Because there was no dog. What a silly child, I thought. There were no canines traversing any road or path. And she pointed and said, "There, in the clouds." Lo and behold, there in fact was a cloud in the shape of a sausage dog. I took it all back and apologized profusely to her for not believing her. There was, in fact, a dog. And, like, it's just crazy to me, after knowing her since she was literally a few weeks old, that she now has a brain that makes dogs and other animals in clouds. Not long later, she spotted an elephant as well. In the clouds, still, not just randomly roving around the Midlands. The elephant was a little bit more nebulous than the dog, but it was still there. It was still definitely an elephant, trunk and everything. And I think that's it, man. That's the stuff we lose when we grow up. Well, it's the stuff we can lose. I know when I'm doing well and I'm aligned with the right part of me, because I find animals and clouds everywhere. My imagination just starts doing stuff like that. Especially dragons. I love finding dragons. I think I may be more akin to stuff like that, and I may be more drawn to stuff like that because I did spend so much time on my own growing up. Like, a lot of time on my own growing up, and my imagination just ran wild. You know, because why wouldn't it? I wasn't doing drugs at 6 years old. I still had a few years yet. I was very high on life and high on the world. Everything was new, and I could just create with my head, and it was nice. And so that part of me is still pretty switched on when I'm in a good place. Like, that's one of the first things that comes back. So I know I'm on the right path. This is a theory of mine. This isn't scientifically backed by any means, so don't take it as gospel. But I wonder if it could be a good idea to, you know, going off the back of what I've just said, just a way to be a bit observant is to look at the positive traits that you had when you were a kid, like a kid, and when you were developing. And if you've grown up and you're struggling mentally, and you tend to lose a lot of those traits, notice when they possibly start to come back. Like, you say, you know, with me, it was my imagination, and I would find things in clouds, and I would just, you know, create stories in my head, and I would look at things in a very different angle, in a very playful angle. But I was never a drawing kid. I never did that, but I know a lot of you probably were. So if you sort of start feeling the urge to sort of doodle about after sort of, you know, trying things that may have helped with self-care, just sort of maybe be, what's the word? Not observant. Conscious. Try and be conscious of that, of those things coming back as a sign that you may be on the right path and doing the right things, and that the things you're doing may be working. Because that, you know, that childlike joy can come out again, because that means a part of your inner child is feeling safe enough to express itself. And safety is what it's all about. When we're feeling safe, we have this space in our minds and in our bodies to create and have fun and be free. So, yeah, just keep an eye on it, I guess. You just need to find the animals in your own clouds, whatever they look like. Because you know what? It made her happy. And it made her happy to tell us that she found it, which made us happy, which made her happy to make us happy, which spread that happiness even more. A circle of happiness, if you will. And that, my wonderful people, has been nebulous. And now we're going to move on to the last word of today, which is crave. And what I like to do with the last word of the episode is to try and put a nice positive spin on it that leaves kind of like a nice message or a lesson of some kind, even though I have already done that with nebulous. I do like to turn it into something good, which you absolutely do not have to take on board if it doesn't resonate with you. But these are just often things that I've come to realize that have just helped me quite a bit on my journey. And crave is an interesting one, apart from it being a banging cereal, because it seems to be a word that often has negative connotations. Well, it usually has negative connotations, because having cravings for something is often seen as quite a naughty thing. Like, it's a bit naughty to indulge in a craving. Almost like there's shame attached to it. And if there's one thing I've learned over the last few years, it's that feeling shame about something does nothing to help it. It only makes it worse. Because we're human, and cravings are very normal things to have. When I stopped smoking, it was just craving central. Because of course it was. I'd been smoking since I was 12. But of course, I'm not just going to suddenly go, I'm done with that now. Like forever and never want it again. Consciously, that's what I wanted to do. But there's a lot of wiring going on in there. All my mind wanted was nicotine. And it was generating excuse after excuse to try and justify a reason to smoke. No matter how irrational it was, it would try and get it in there. Luckily for me, this was around the time I was doing a lot of research into neuropsychology and why we do the things that we do. Behavioral stuff, you know. All that fun shit. And cravings, in themselves, are exactly the same as passing thoughts. Technically. But we so often give them so much more power. Because with cravings, there is something to attribute those thoughts to. You know, it is a cigarette that I want. It is alcohol that I want. It is something sweet. You know, when really all it is our brain going, I want to feel good. It's dopamine. The it is dopamine, the reward chemical. It wants that relief of feeling good by getting the thing. And then what it does is make you think that anything isn't as good without these things. Now, craving silence in a room full of people shouting and being dickheads, I get that. That's a bit different. Because that's, you know, that's something our body needs. Peace, regulation, calm, lowering of
stress chemicals, you know, a decline in stimulation a lot of the time. But the impulse of a craving normally comes from a very irrational place, out of nowhere, like most intrusive thoughts do. And what happens when we don't indulge these cravings? Nothing. Nothing changes. Nothing. The world doesn't end. We accept. And we move on. If we allow ourselves to. On its own, a craving really only lasts a few minutes, I think. And it'll fade out nearly as quickly as it faded in. We let that happen. We get our peace back. No shame. No guilt. And a positive feeling to move forward with. Or at least a feeling of acceptance. Now, it is totally your choice whether to indulge in these cravings or not. I'm not here to tell you don't do it. I'm just here to give you a bit of a why. My point here is don't berate or beat yourself down purely for having them. We're human. We're all a bit messy. They come, they chat some shit to you for a bit, and then they leave. And that's about it. Until the next one. And then the same thing happens. Such is life. Such as this podcast, really. I come, I chat shit for a bit, and then I leave. Until the next one. So, with that, I'm going to leave you. That's a wonderful place to end it, I think. And I hope it's helped in some way. This whole thing. I hope you're chilled. I hope you're relaxed. I hope you're doing okay. And I hope you have a wonderful week. And whatever hardships come your way, as they so often do, take a breath, let the intenseness pass, and remind yourself that you have the strength and the smarts to get through these things. So go be kind to yourself, take care of yourself, and I will speak to you soon, hopefully before the marathon. I'm going to see how I go. If not before the marathon, then probably not long after it, because I'm not going to be doing much walking or going anywhere for a while after that. After those 26.2 miles, I imagine. So, yeah, you'll probably get an episode out of that where I'm just, you know, every 30 seconds it'll be... But that's then's problem. Right now, it's been a wonderful time. I wish you well, and I will speak to you soon. Oh, if you wanted to donate to Alzheimer's Research UK, who I am running the marathon for, you can do that at justgiving.com/cavernsrun. Wicked. Speak to you soon. Okay. Bye.